Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
It's just fortuitous and a little bit, I suppose, I don't know, serendipitous that Rabbi Leo D. is in studio with us today. He, of course, is a former director of a private equity fund in London, but he is not, and he's also a rabbi. He's become a very, very well known to us around the world. We've chatted with him before, and of course he is also known for his work after the terrible tragedy, the murder of his wife and daughters in a terror attack that was back in April 2023. And when we spoke last time, he mentioned that it was almost the start of what would become this horrific war. Rabbi Leo D., welcome to South Africa and welcome to Chai FM.
Howard, good to be here again.
The for anybody who doesn't know the story, I apologize for having to ask you just to go through it again, but it is important for our conversation. Take us back to April 2023.
It was the 7th of April 2023, the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach in Israel. My wife and I both set out from our home in Efrat to Tiberias, in two separate cars, Lucy with my daughter Maya, who was 20, and my daughter Rina, who was 15, me with another two children, and a fifth child was in Jerusalem for that Shabbat. It was a Friday. We drove up the 90 highway in the Jordan Valley. Waze wanted us to take a left at the Hamra Junction. I changed Waze to continue straight on. Lucy sadly did not, and she was encountered by two Hamas terrorists, and they were murdered in cold blood. We buried my daughters on the Sunday and my wife on the Tuesday.
Was this opportunistic? Were they lying in wait? What do you know about the actual incident?
I had a conversation with President Herzog subsequently after the war started, and he said to me, "Your family were the first victims of this war."
Right.
The 5th of April, 2 days before, the Israeli army had entered the Al-Aqsa Mosque in order to put down an uprising. They had a load of weapons and they tied people together. There's a famous photograph. And then 2 days later, my wife and daughters were killed. Apparently, they were thinking at that time Hamas of launching the attack against Israel on that Pesach. For whatever reason, they changed their mind, maybe after the attack. And they delayed until Sukkot, effectively, till Simchat Torah. But they then called the war the Al-Aqsa Flood.
Right, which links it directly back to that time.
Links it directly back to the 5th of April, which is when it kicked off.
Yeah, unfortunately, the fact that there was the sign that this was happening makes, unfortunately, the ignoring of so many of the other signs that much worse.
So our family was the third a couple of siblings who were killed within a few weeks. And people were saying at the time that this was a time when the Israeli society was pulled apart from lack of what they considered to be lack of achdut, of brotherly love. And unfortunately, we're here again. And the Jewish people, the Israeli people need to, you know, being given another message of achdut. And I think Hashem is shouting out from the heavens and telling us what we need to do, and we're still not listening completely.
All right. In what way aren't we listening?
I think that we're not aware. Many people are not aware of the level of evil, I think you referred to earlier, that we're up against. And I think there's always in the Jewish soul a feeling of chesed, of kindness, comes from Avraham Avinu, that we give people the benefit of the doubt, and we say, well, maybe they're not all like that. Maybe it's a very small group of people. Maybe the general population there are kind and just want to live in peace. And we keep getting these messages from our enemies that they're not like that. They're telling us they're not like that. They're telling us that they want to kill us all, and they want to do this over and over again. And then we're confronted by yet another and yet another tragedy. And this tragedy is, you know, just another tragedy in a list of tragedies. And I think that in Jewish history, when we've listened to the voice and we've reacted, we are able to overcome it and to move forward. But when we don't listen to it, unfortunately, the history shows things get worse, and then they get worse, and they get worse. You know?
So is what you're saying that we're not listening to the messages about our enemies, or that we're not listening to messages about Achdut, or both?
I think the two are connected, because it's clear that when we are not united, then our enemies take advantage of that.
Right. Isn't it a... I was monitoring my own reaction, as I often do, when I was looking a little bit earlier at the stage set up by Hamas for the return of the murdered family, and I was quite shocked by it. And then I realized it's actually amazing that Hamas can still shock me, mm-hmm. that no matter what, that they still have the ability. But I wonder if that's not a good thing.
It is a good thing. It's a tragedy. And as far as to Yarden Bibas, the only thing one could say today is En Milim. There are no words. That was the only thing that people said to me at the time that gave me any sort of comfort. Any attempt to try and put into words how we feel is insufficient, because we know how we feel. Everybody feels that same feeling. And there's no way to put it into words. The same way you can't describe blue and you can't describe vanilla flavor. There are certain things that we all know what it is, but we just can't describe it. So that's...
So what were... When you went through this, and I want to talk to you a little bit about that, because maybe that's a way to guide us. And obviously everybody's experience and feelings and journey is a different one. But what brought you comfort soon after this unimaginable loss? It's not something that anybody could.
So there's a verse that we say in our davening three times a day, which is Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzvaakot Melech La'aretz Kavodo. And we know that those who die fighting for their country, for the Jewish people, those who die in terror attacks because they're Jewish, are dying B'Kiddush Hashem, which means in sanctification, holiness of God's name. And when three people die like this in one go from a family, I think that we can imagine Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh is referring today towards Kefir, Ariel, and Shiri. Hashem Tzvaakot is an interesting name for God, means God. But actually, says Rav Kook, Tzvaot means the war of words, war of letters. And basically, that is what we need to do now. Now we need to speak out on radio, on television, in press. Melokh La'aretz Kavodo, the world will be full of Hashem's glory. This is the opportunity for Jews to stand up, and for good people all over the world, to stand up and to express in words what is going on here and what needs to happen and how we can bring this to an end. And that, I think, is was my motto from the word go. Don't get mad, get even. I think, I wouldn't say that anger is a good feeling. I think anger is always a bad feeling. I think that we need to convert those feelings, complex feelings, including anger, into action. And if this becomes just one day of grief, then we failed. Then we've not reached the message. This should become the next phase of action. This is just the launching pad for the next phase of action. And then we create meaning out of this loss, this unbearable loss. And we can transform the situation. I think that this is the opportunity for us, for Israel to take the moral leadership, and we've got support from the President of the United States to go in. And yes, we want the rest of the hostages back, but the correct way to get the hostages back must be to go and attack.
Through strength.
And until they come out with white flags saying, please, can we give you the hostages back?
Well, the fact is that they can set up a stage and print and publish these massive posters means there is, and yes, of course, it's in order to show that they have won, but to some extent, it means I kind of have.
Right. At the moment, they're winning, because any government that does a deal with terrorists to release terrorists for hostages is is losing. And as one of the commentators pointed out, this is the first time in history that a government has actually negotiated with terrorists in terms of handing back territory and handing back wins from the war in order to release hostages. It's not just a pure swap of hostages for terrorists. It's actually giving them back territory and pulling out our troops. That's the first time in history that any government has ever done such a deal for the release of
prostitutes. And of course, what you're talking about, the war on words, is very, very interesting. You've come to South Africa where we have been used as a tool for a war on words. Apartheid, the apartheid analogy, which is totally false, is a very evil, actually, and cynical use of the word. Genocide is these so-called humanitarian organizations, even the Red Cross, all of these organizations claiming to be about humanitarian aid. This is a war on words. It is a war on sheker, but, on lies.
You know, I say, Howard, Baruch Hashem, because when all this sheker, all this lies come out from the South African government, people can see straight through it, actually. The light is shining on truth in our generation since October the 7th in a way that it's never shone before. The South African people are generally very, very intelligent, have good moral compass. They themselves can see that their government is full of lies. And this could be, you know, this could be why the ANC didn't do so well in the previous elections. This will be why they'll be brought down in the next elections.
No doubt.
And so therefore, you know, what's happening after the 7th of October, we saw Trump win the elections again in those borderline states where universities were given free rein to allow evil people to march down the streets, and decent people in those borderline states said, we don't want this, and they voted for Trump. So October the 7th, you know, being on the one hand, it's the one greatest tragedy that's happened to the Jewish people in our lifetimes. On the other hand, it's the greatest transformative moment for mankind.
I'm chatting to Rabbi Leo D. We're talking about his experience. We're going to go to ads. We'll be back in a short while. Send me your questions. Send me your comments on 061-895-1019. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
It is 8:47. I'm Howard Feldman. This is the Morning Mayhem. It's 101.9 Chai FM. Joining me in studio is Rabbi Leo D. And in fact, he is also speaking this evening. If you do want to find out more, you can go to the www.sazf.org website, or you can just email them on admin@sazf.org, and you can find out a little bit more about the talk that he is giving this evening. Rabbi Leo D. So how did you've gone through this enormous loss, tragedy, your world is upended, and now you've got to find the way forward. You've also got other children who are suffering beyond imagination. How do you take the next step forward?
The strange thing, Howard, is that there's a famous saying, which is that the difference between optimist and pessimist is that the optimist thinks that the world is at its best ever, and the pessimist agrees. And the strange thing is that when you reach rock bottom, there actually is only one way up. So actually, strangely enough, when you go through such a tremendous tragedy, which is so unbearable that you can't describe it, you can't think about it, you are the person who knows that tomorrow will be a better day. And so you have more hope than anyone else. And that's slightly paradoxical, but I guess it's a small gift that Hashem has given to people who have gone through these tragedies. So there is the possibility to find hope, even especially when you've been through such a terrible loss.
And how did you manage with your kids? Because you're dealing with your own stuff, but you're also dealing with being responsible for their journey as well, or assisting them on their journey. They're responsible for their journey.
It's been a sort of a two-way street in the sense that seeing them has given me hope. I think them seeing me coping has given them hope. And you know, we work together and we bring each other up. But Baruch Hashem, they've all started amazing new careers, let's say. My son started a new school, and my daughter, one daughter is in the Air Force. Another daughter did incredible work with orphan kids for 2 years. And the fact that they're just giving, and the fact that they're active, and they've got new friends, they've got new environments, has helped them tremendously.
All right. When we go through then, all of that is you then become a person who starts to assist others. You take a very positive step forward on in terms of this journey. And then October the 7th happens. How do you cope with that? That has to have dragged you back to where you were.
So, Howard, interesting that after the Shloshim, I turned to my kids and I said to them, we're starting a new world. I said, we've had 30 days of suffering, of tears, of mourning, but we're now starting a new world. It's a world with one parent and three kids. We started with two parents and five kids. It's going to be a good world, a happy world, but a world that's with memories of world number one, but a very different world. And on October the 7th, which was exactly 6 months to the day from our tragedy, we honestly felt that we were in world number three. And so whilst we were joining the national mourning, and we actually were another world away from our own personal tragedy. And I feel every time, you know, the world moves on an extra stage, that's what's happening. I think that, you know, the healthy way to look at this terrible tragedy that we're all witnessing and feeling today is to say we're now in the next world and it has to be a different world. In other words, if we don't change the way that we're dealing with this and we're looking at this and thinking about this and acting because of this, then it's just a waste. Then it absolutely is a completely unbearable tragedy. But if, because of what's happening, we all take on upon ourselves some way of expressing this, you know, not just today, but actually onwards, and say this is, you know, going to give us the energy to fight this evil, then we can take some meaning out of it.
How do you personally not get locked in to the being the tragedy guy?
Very good question. It's very interesting. After the tragedy, I had two different types of interviews with you know, the Sky News and CNN and BBC, whatever, who were only interested in knowing the pure details of the day and exactly how they were killed and how I felt when I saw the bodies. And I came out feeling, if I can use the word, raped and just, you know, depressed from those interviews. And then I had interviews with Jewish radio stations, television, and religious sites. And all they wanted to know was how I was feeling and how I was dealing with it and how we could overcome it and how we could move forward. And I felt uplifted. And I realized that you have a choice.
So interesting.
You have a choice. And I think that we always have a choice of whether we want to look, you know, live in the past with all the pain, or we want to live in the future, which is with all you know, the hope of a new world, which can be much better.
But hope that's realistic. Because that's a little bit earlier, that was something that you seem to feel quite strongly about, is that we need to stop deluding ourselves as to the real state of the world and not seeing things only through the way in which we optimistically hope they will be.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that we, as a Jewish people in Israel, we behave like we are in Galut, in exile. You know, we have the most powerful army in the world, possibly. And we have, you know, the most moral right to fight this war than any war probably ever previously fought. And yet we're fighting on the back foot as if we should give humanitarian aid and we have to behave like we, you know, the sort of this great Orla Goyim, which we're not. Because frankly, most of the non-Jewish people who have moral compass are saying, why are you doing this? Just win this war. And you know, funnily enough, in this week's parsha, Mishpatim, there's a law, a mitzvah, which is Ababa Mechteret, which is, you know, someone who comes and attacks you through a tunnel. I mean, I don't think it could be more.
Wow, wow.
And what is the law? Law is hukat v'meit. It means if he is hit, if he is struck and dies, then you have no obligation. You have no guilt. What that means is that when people dig tunnels in order to attack you, you just fight back. You couldn't drop a bomb on the whole lot of them, basically, and all those tunnels and all that's when we've done that. That's been a successful approach. When we've stood back and we've said, look, here, have some electricity to power your, you know, ventilation under the tunnels, and here's some food for you terrorists and whatever. We're losing. So at some point we have to look at what is morally right. The world is begging us to do it. You know, apart from a few governments who are corrupt, who are covering their own corruption.
Not mentioning names.
Who are covering their own corruption by basically supporting a terrorist regime, because they're basically terrorist regimes themselves. So apart from them, you know, the vast majority of humanity actually is looking at us as a moral guide to say, please do it. And Trump, Baruch Hashem, you know, is giving us a green light. So I think if we don't take this opportunity to now take this step forward and get them coming out with white flags. You know, if a man refuses to give a get under Jewish law, the Rambam says that you're allowed to the Bet Din is allowed to hit him
And just to be clear, sorry, for any of our non-Jewish listeners, to give a get is the divorce process in a Jewish marriage. And the man gives his wife a get, she receives it, and then they're divorced. The problem is sometimes you get some not-so-great guys who try to, who really hold their wife. I don't want to use the word hostage, it's not appropriate today, but effectively they are. And what Rabbi Adi is talking about is what you can do to, in inverted commas, encourage him to do right. So.
And according to Jewish law, the Bet Din can, the Jewish court can beat him until he says, Ani rotzeh, I want to give the divorce settlement. And I think that we're in a situation here where it's very clear. We need to beat our enemy until they say, we want to give back the hostages. Right. We want to leave this country, the terrorists. We want to leave and go and live in Qatar, which is our great supporter and giving us all this funding. We want to leave this country and we want peace.
Is there a price too high? Is there a price too high to pay for the release of the hostage? I know it's an impossible question to ask, to answer, but we've seen some terrible things. We've seen the Gilad Shalit situation where the price is being paid later. Is there a price too high?
I think that from the beginning, the Israeli government was saying that we have two objectives. One is to release the hostages and two is to win the war. And I think the mistake they made was by making it two objectives. Really, that is one objective. We should win the war and thereby force them to bring to hand the hostages home. And I think that making it two objectives has created a situation where people are marching down the street demanding one over the other. And they should come hand in hand. We need to win this war. I mean, when we beat the Nazis in the Second World War, they handed back the prisoners of war. That was how it worked. It wasn't that we negotiated prisoners of war swaps. We beat them until they said, please take your prisoners of war back. And that's how you win a war.
We're not winning it from a media perspective either. Just yesterday, News24, a local website, led with an article saying, I don't know, however many billions needed to address the damage on Israel's war on Gaza. And I thought to myself, can you imagine talking about Britain's war on Germany? It wasn't Britain's war on Germany. So this doesn't help us, does it?
It's one of the things that I've noticed is that a lot of the media is obviously against Israel, the vast majority, but the people are not. And I think that the media is not doing itself a favor. When these media organizations come out with these lies, CNN has less viewers now on many of its programs than some internet teenagers.
Absolutely.
And so they've lost viewership and Baruch Hashem, because people are fed up of listening to the lies of a very small group of extremists.
In 1 minute or less. Which is an impossibility. How do we get through today, the next few days, and with a view of a better world?
Howard, I think that today is Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur. We're being asked to make a commitment to ourselves. We're being asked to decide how we're going to react to this, right? We're not going to feel the pain. The pain is there. It's a blessing. The pain tells us we need to do something. If we can convert that pain into action, and everybody knows themselves what that action has to be, and everybody has a different action which they have to take, then we're winning. So it's up to us. Every individual can take that pain and put it somewhere useful and productive and can change the situation, but everyone has to take responsibility and personal responsibility for that.
And that is where we leave it. And you did it exactly in the right amount of time. So well done to you on that. That was Rabbi Leo Adi. And that brings us to the end of the Morning Mayhem. Thank you for joining us. Go and have a strong day. Go and have a positive day. And we'll get back together tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Don't be late.